Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, everybody. This is the Tony Demolition Man Dolan from Venom Inc., and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Mark Striegel,
John Astronomy,
the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly, and now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, this is John Astronomy. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. We got a great show for you. Our special guest today is Tony Demolition Man Dolan from Venom Inc. I am coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft, and on Skype is Mark Demolition Striegel. I'm kidding.
Yeah, how are you, John?
Good.
Yeah, hey. I tell you, they should call Tony Dolan the Renaissance Man, because this guy does it all. I mean, he's an actor, he's a musician, he's just a guy who's been doing art and all sorts of stuff for years and years and years, and I'm so honored to have him back on Talking Metal. One
Absolutely.
Of the first interviews Venom Inc. ever did when they got together was with Talking Metal, up in person one up in Heavy Montreal. That time we had the whole band, this time we have just Tony, and I'm so glad to talk with him again. I mean, just the nicest guy, John. I mean, you got to hear this interview. He's just such a sweet, great guy, and really a big part of Venom's legendary history. And Venom Inc. is the new band. It essentially is two-thirds of the original classic Venom, with Tony, who was in Venom for three albums, I believe. Now those three guys have Venom Inc.
Very, very cool. I'm definitely excited to hear the interview, and I've been a longtime fan of all the stuff, so this is very, very cool.
Now, the interview with Tony was conducted probably about 10 days ago, and I wish I could have gotten it up sooner, but there's just been, life has been crazy, which we'll get into later. But since I recorded this 10 days ago, they've announced that the record is on its way. The full-length record is coming out on August 11th via Nuclear Blast, and it, of course, features Tony Dolan and Mantis and Abaddon. So, I mean, just really classic Venom is back with Venom Inc. And we are going to talk about a lot of stuff in this interview, which I want to set the interview up a little bit more, John. But why don't we get into a brand new track by Venom Inc. that was just released that you can purchase on iTunes right now. We'll hear a sound sample of it. Dein Fleisch. Am I saying that right, John?
I think so. It reminds me of Weiss's Fleisch, Rammstein song, so I bet that's probably how it's said.
Awesome. Let's check it out right now on Talking Metal. Little brand new Venom Inc. coming off the album, which I'm guessing is pronounced Ave, A-V-E, with one of those little like lines, Anx and Grave, is that what it's called? Like,
I'm not even sure. I used to be an expert in French, and we used to have one of those on E's in French, and I I thought it was called one thing, and now I think it's called something else, and it shows how much I learned back in school. And I was the number one kid in my grade in French, and sadly, I can't remember what that's called. But that was a long time ago, and now I am in an old age segment of my life, I believe, at this point. So I'm forgetting things.
Well, before we get into this interview, I know we both want to kind of just do some random plugs.
Yes.
I'm cracking a beer, and that's what I want to plug. Holy shit, it's like spilling all over the fucking place.
Hold on for 30 seconds. I'll be right back.
I don't know where he's going.
Hey, I'm back.
Oh, you're back. That wasn't 30 seconds.
That was like 5 seconds. Wow. I heard some noises, and I had to shut the door of the I had to pull the hatch down on the silver spacecraft.
All right.
I'm in like a small control panel right now.
I'm drinking Two Roads beer. It's out of Connecticut.
Wow. Oh, that sounds
Lil
good.
Heaven is it is the flavor or whatever you call it. The wow.
I would say flavor. You know.
Yeah, flavor. And it is an IPA. It's very good. I really good. Like this company. It's not super heavy on the alcohol. You know, some of these IPAs are like, you know, 8%, 9% alcohol. There's right. like 4.5%.
That's cool.
But the flavor is just delicious. It's a great IPA. Highly recommended. Again, Lil Heaven by Two Roads out of Connecticut. And John, you were just telling me about a great place over in Jersey City before we started rolling.
Yeah, yeah.
Take.
So this is not an alcohol serving establishment. This is a great deli. And I just got to put in a little plug because a really cool thing happened. This deli is usually open until 4 p.m. On weekdays. And the owner, his name is Salvatore, such a nice man. He had to get to his other restaurant, which is called Abudanza. And they closed like just a couple of minutes early. And I knocked on the door or I saw him coming out. And I said, oh, guys, are you closed? And he said, yeah. He goes, you know, we just closed like 5 minutes early. And I was like, ah, that's okay. And he was like, he was such a nice guy. He said, no, I want you to come inside. And they had put everything away. And he was so nice that he said, what would you like? And I said, oh, maybe I'll take some meatballs and I'll take chicken cutlet. And these are like New York term guys,
right?
New York, New Jersey terms. And he told one of the people that had already packed everything up, go get this man some stuff. And then they brought that out and he goes, let's get some bread for him and let's get all this. And then I went to pay and he's like, on the house. And how cool
really?
Is that? Yeah.
That's amazing, dude.
He invited me into a closed place just because he felt bad because he closed like about 5 minutes early. And I was like, no, that's totally fine, man. No problem. And he gave me all this food that I had asked for free. And his name is Salvatore from Milano Deli in Jersey City, New Jersey. Also, go check out Abudanza, his other restaurant.
And that's awesome. That's a good businessman because you will be back now. And
absolutely.
You'll probably go back even more than you normally would.
Yeah.
You know, because somebody does that for you. I mean, that's just a class act. And I totally understand why you wanted to mention it here on the show. And
absolutely.
We got to go there and you got to introduce me to some of this food this guy serves up.
Yeah, this stuff is amazing.
My mouth is watering right now.
You should see the line. You know, this the area where it is sort of a business district. Even like they call it like Wall Street West, I believe. And there is a line out the door for lunch in this place. And what's even cooler is I totally did not realize that Abudanza, the actual sit down restaurant, was owned by him as well. And so not only am I going to return to the Milano Deli, but I'm going to go over to Abudanza as well because this guy's food is the best. No doubt.
Awesome. Awesome. Venom Inc. is online at venom-inc.com. They're on Facebook, facebook.com/Venom Inc. Official. And nuclearblast.de/Venom Inc. is another place where you can check these guys out. We'll have those links in today's show notes on TalkingMetal.com. Guys, there's a lot of stuff going on TalkingMetal.com. It's not just podcasts anymore. We're posting news events and links to other news events that we think are cool. Lots of photos from places like M3 where John and I just hung out. A lot of great stuff going on the site. Please check it out. Let us know what you think by using the comments section. And I guess we should get into this interview, right, John?
I think so. And yeah, without question, let's get into the interview. And then when we come back, we're going to give you guys some classic Talking Metal style. What would you call it? Riffing.
Yeah.
Or ranting.
Yeah, let's do it. And raving. Yeah. I want to talk about Iron Maiden, too. We just saw them on Wednesday together.
Ghost and Iron Maiden.
Yeah, cool. Here's some old school Venom going back to the 80s. This is with Demolition Man on vocals. And this is great stuff. You can't forget about the stuff that Tony Dolan did with Venom, because there's some really great stuff in his era of that band. And I'm just so psyched he is back together with these guys in the newer, it kind of is classic Venom, because it's really three guys who at one time were Venom and now they're Venom Inc. And it's great stuff. And I love this guy, Tony Dolan. So let's check out some music and then hear my interview with Tony Dolan. A couple things I'd just like to set up is, you know, we do reference a lot of stuff that Tony's done, his older bands, this other, you know, this other project he was working on that kind of led to the formation of Venom Inc. And, you know, pay close attention, because a lot of stuff gets said here. And, when I was giving the interview, my head was spinning a little bit trying to remember everything that's going on. But it just goes to show you how incredibly busy this guy has been, and how much great work he has put out through the years, not just with Venom and Venom Inc., but with other bands too. So stay tuned for what I think is a really fun interview. Here we go. Venom on Talking Metal, followed by a chat with Tony Dolan, the Demolition Man. We'll be right back.
What you just heard right there, a little classic Venom, Blackened Are the Priests. And on the line, we have from Venom Inc., Tony Dolan.
Hey,
Tony.
How are you?
Hi.
Hey, hello. Hello. And it's good to talk to you again, Mike.
Yeah. We were just reminiscing before we started the interview here about Heavy Montreal, which was, I guess, back when Venom Inc. was still rather new. And here we are, I guess, 2-3 years later. And there's a lot going on. I can't wait to talk to you about all this stuff, including new music. But first off, I think you guys just played out, I think it was in California, the Blackest of the Black Festival. How'd that go?
Yeah, that's right, Mark. We did. It was fantastic. I mean, it was up in Silverado in the canyon there, and Glenn Danzig kind of put it on, and Suicidal Tendency Ministry, and we got a special invitation to come over and be part of it. So we were quite honored by that. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing. It was perfect weather. Everybody was, you know, having a great time. The bands were totally hitting it, and for us it was absolutely amazing, and also doubly because, you know, we aired one of the new songs from the new album that's coming up for the first time. So it was quite a pleasure to be able to deliver something brand new to a US audience, which meant a lot to us, because we played some festivals back home before we came over, and we didn't play anything new. We were holding on so we could drop it on an American audience first, and so it was quite special.
Right. Well, that's awesome, and I cannot wait to hear this new music. And I have to ask you, the metal websites and stuff have been reporting that you have signed to Nuclear Blast, and that a new album is on the way. And I just wanted to kind of find out where you guys are at. Obviously, you played a new song live, so the songwriting, I'm guessing, has begun, or is maybe already complete at this point.
Yeah, everything's done. I mean, we kind of got stuck for time because, you know, since we kind of started, the three of us, back at it, we haven't been able to take the foot off the gas. It's like, you know, every time we went to sit down, it was like there was more shows. So kind of, I think people got a kind of wrong idea that we were just going out and, you know, cabareting friggin' the Venom
right.
material. But it wasn't that at all, you know. The reason we went back to the beginning and started from there to travel right through the legacy was because there's so many fantastic songs in the Venom catalog, and we didn't want to leave anything uncovered, you know. And some people thought, you know, maybe you should focus on the My Era, but it's all inclusive, you know. It's all inclusive, and we're traveling through the whole catalog, and you know, we eventually, John Zazula, you know, Megaforce, Metallica came in with Chuck Billy, and he just said, you know, we gotta get some new material. What do you want to do? And we had a window, but it was a very tight window. So we tried to get in there as fast as we could at the December into January, February, and get everything done, you know, artworks and recordings and just everything. So we just all went at it as fast as we could. And then we ended up with some demos for John, and he, you know, said, who should we hit? And I had one target in mind, which was Nuclear Blast, you know.
Yeah.
I have an association with them, of course, but also because I just think, you know, they would be a great label for us if we could get them. We sent the demos off, and almost on return, they went, okay, let's do it. Let's find it. Let's get it done. It's great. And that was it. So, you know, they've got everything. The album's about to drop in the summer.
Okay.
They're going to announce the date soon. Lyric video. We've seen some work that's being done at the time and now. You know, a poster campaign. I mean, it's just amazing. It's truly amazing. And we have Circle Talent, who've been working hard for the US tour, 30-odd dates. And we could have done more. We thought we'd done enough, but there's still people going, why aren't you playing here? Why aren't you playing there? And promoters coming in. So, you know, that would be perfect. But we get to do that during September, and we'll have the album out. So we get to play brand new stuff. And it will be the first time we'll be doing it. So the first time we get to be playing the album material live will be in the USA. So that's something. And of course, Canada, we do go up there.
Okay.
Too. So, you know, although someone complained the other day and said, you might as well just call it North, North, you might as well just call it USA tour because you're only just coming to the border in Canada.
Well,
we were planning Alaska, Saskatoon or something, but end up at Yellowknife, but maybe next time.
Yeah, maybe next time. And circle back to the new record, which you said drops this summer. I'm really excited for this. Stylistically, what can we expect? Is this, I mean, Venom has been a band that, you know, has always been extreme in their sound, but there has been some variation in the style of the music. What kind of songwriting style and what level of aggression can we expect on this release coming this summer?
Well, you know, Mark, it was one of those things that when you know, because none of this was planned, it's all just kind of happy accident. We just got in the saddle and just let the horse run its course. So we didn't plan anything, and very much it became obvious to us that what we do on stage is who we are. You know, I mean, anybody can play the music, but not everybody can be the characters.
Right.
And it's an extension of who they were. I mean, the first tour we came out, real tour we came out of the gate on, people were commenting on Mantis' guitar sound and go, wow, he's got that guitar sound again, and it sounds like the original stuff, and how does he get that sound? And it's like, basically, he's the same person who played there. He just plays the same, you know, with his sound, and that's what people are realizing. Same thing for Abaddon, you know. It's like, why can people, you know, play Bloodlust or something like that and not quite capture that feeling? Because he played it. It's him playing it. It's an extension of him. You know, so the music is as much part of the characters. And so, you know, when looking at the new album, it's like, well, do you plagiarize yourself? Do you try and mimic yourself? Do you try and copy something? Or do you look at what's happening now and think, oh, maybe we should streamline it a bit? Or maybe we and at the end of the day, you have to sit down and say, you know, if you want to be honest, you just be yourself. You know, right. Motorhead were Motorhead when they started, and they were Motorhead when Lemmy left us, you know, and that was just it, you know. And that's it. It's indicative, you know. Slayer was Slayer and will be Slayer. You know, they'll always be the same people playing the music that they're recognized for. And I think it's the same for Venom and any connection of Venom. It's like, you know, we went into this album just being ourselves, and it came out as us. So there's extremity in there. There's harmony in there. There's, you know, all those moments, because, you know, looking back at the catalogue, if you put, you know, In League with Satan next to Bloodlust, next to Die Hard, next to Seven Gates of Hell, next to Manitou, you know, you can see the coloration. There's highs and lows, extremes, and some harmonious stuff in there. So there's lots of coloration, and we just did the same thing. We let it come naturally. If it came out and that's what it was, that's what it was. Right. And so we didn't plan anything. We didn't try to make it sound like anything. We just went in there as us, and it came out us. So and we're very pleased with it, and the label's incredibly happy with it. So, you know, all points north, and let's hope everybody out there, when they hear it, feel the same as we all do.
Oh, I'm sure we're going to. And was there a producer or engineer, anybody significant in the studio with you?
Yes, there was. I mean, you know, we had a few producers asking to do it, funnily enough, and John Cezula was telling us about this guy, and this guy, and this guy's hot, and this guy's really into it, this guy wants to do it, and everything else. But at the end of the day, you know, Mantis has been producing his own stuff for so long, and it's something he really, really wanted to do. So he said, oh, can I do it? Give me a shot to do it. And John was like, yeah, but it's going to be, you know, really great and blah, blah, blah. And I just said, it is going to be, you know, if you go outside of your camp, it can work. Of course, there's fantastic producers, but you have to know the band, I think. In order for us to be us, someone needs to know us very well, and how we think and how we are and as characters, but how our sound comes out, and who better to do that than one of us? So, you know, Mantis did the production. We had a guy from Germany, a good friend of ours, Kali Osman, who's great engineer and producer in his own right. He came over and sat in and tips and guides and stuff, but Jeff handled the production and it came out monstrous, absolutely monstrous. And it's fantastic. And it's so nice to know that it was all done in-house, you know, yeah. It's just us. You know, and not for a financial saving, just because it was an important album and we wanted it to be us, you know. And it's turned out superb. He's done an amazing job.
Awesome, awesome. Well, again, I can't wait to hear it coming this summer. Brand new music from Venom Inc. We are talking with Demolition Man, Tony Dolan. A fall tour in the States. You hinted at it earlier. We're very excited for this. You're going to be, I think, the second or third day is in New York City. I will be there. Cannot wait. This is taking you all over the country, right? This is a pretty big tour.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've done, I think we're on about a third or fourth tour of duty, fourth with this maybe in the USA. And, you know, I guess it's kind of, you know, back in the day, you know, people didn't get to see Venom so much because they didn't do so many shows here. And, you know, and one of the commentaries we had when myself and Jeff toured as Empire of Evil in the USA was that people, the American audience, would look to Europe and think, fuck, they get all the best bands, they get all the best festivals, they get all, you know, this and this, and we get jacked here. You know, there's Ozzfest and there's some things, not fest and stuff, but, you know, generally, you know, the people were looking at that and saying, we want a piece of that. And I guess in the back of our heads it was, you know, we owe the fans who've been there, you know, new fans too, but also older fans who've been there for forever, you know, from day one and may not have got an opportunity. Or, you know, if a band comes and plays in New York and someone lives in, I don't know, you know, Idaho or something,
right,
you know, somebody could maybe, you know, take a plane and go see the band, but most people don't kind of have that disposable income, especially these days, to be able to travel all the way across just for one night show in an expensive state. So, you know, if we could go to their house and play right in front of them, then brilliant. And that was the idea, you know.
Yeah.
So a couple of times, you know, like on the last tour, because it was winter, or the time before we were in winter, you know, we got to some places and there was winter storms, of course, you know, and so lower attendance came, you know, just because people have to travel so far in the USA. Now, on the one hand, you could look at that and go, you know, there was like 180 people, but there was 180 fans who made it to get there. So, you know, if we didn't play that and we bypassed them, they might not have got a chance to see us. So for us, it was really important if there was, you know, if it's 10,000 or 10, it makes no difference. If they're fans and this is their opportunity, we want to take it to them. We want to bring them it. And we will play exactly the same if we're in a shit house, a clubhouse, a fucking arena, or it makes no difference. We give the same show and leave ourselves on stage because that's what we owe back, I think, really.
That's really great to respect the fans like that. We, being a fan, you know, I appreciate that, and just really excited you guys are back out there doing it. But, you know, right now, let's take a little trip back in time, going back to 1989, the Primeval album. Any memories you can share of that record coming together? And that was, I believe, your first record with Venom. Can you share any stories or memories about producing that record with the guys?
Well, you know, that I think that whole time was kind of special. You know, the year before, I did a big tour with my band Atom Craft with Nasty Savage and Exhuma, and Abaddon was our tour manager on the tour. And we actually were in, I think it was the final day in Poland, and there was a Polish band supporting us called Wolf Spider. And Atom Craft, yeah. And they said about jamming something, and Tony came and said, should we do Welcome to Hell? You know, because everybody could see Abaddon was there, but of course he wasn't as a performer. And so we said, yeah, let's do it. So we all got on stage and we jammed that, and people went crazy. So as a one-off, then we flipped over the end of the tour. My band kind of just, you know, the singer decided he wanted to go and do something else. The guitarist decided he wanted to be a puppet master or something. I don't know. Okay. Everybody kind of freaked. And I thought we were on a good roll because we were getting noticed by the British press at last. We had some demos in our pocket. Things felt pretty good. And then they were kind of walking away. So I guess I'd done something to piss them off. I don't know. But anyway, I sort of sat out and thought, well, what do we want to do next? And the drummer said, maybe we audition guitarists. I thought, you know, I don't want to go through all that shit again, starting from scratch. And just when we got to this point, so I guess I was kind of packing everything away, really. And then I got a call from Abaddon and Eric Cook, who we just lost, the former Venom manager,
sure, yep,
to go and meet them in a pub. And we chatted, and they said that Kronos had left. He wanted to go solo, relocating to the USA. And they had a deal on the table from Music for Nations, and they were thinking, you know, they wanted to do the deal. So they were just looking for a bass vocalist. So I thought they wanted me to try and have a think who I could think of. And it was me. And, you know, I didn't consider, because people think, you know, ooh, was it big boots to fill, and how did you feel? And I didn't think anything of that. You know, I just thought, here's a band that I had a history with, not just as a band, but as the people, you know, because we all come from the same place and went to the same places and saw each other and everything. But I also was a fan of what they did. Right. So for me, it was like, oh, I get to play with some friends, and I get to play some great music. And who wouldn't want to get on a stage and play black metal or you know, Bloodlust or, yeah, you know, Welcome to Hell or something? So I was like, oh, yeah, fucking fantastic. So I didn't actually, maybe naivety, but I didn't actually consider I was replacing anybody. I was just joining my mates in a band. You know, Mantis came back, and it was, like, fantastic. And it was, like, the best time. I thought it was absolutely the best time, you know, writing for Primeval and then recording it. You know, we just had such a great time. We wrote together, and we wrote separately, and we worked in the studio. We had a laugh, because we always do, you know. And then we went to a residential studio for the production. Got Nick Tauber, who's famous for doing Whiskey in a Jar, and had also done the Calm Before the Storm album. And he understood the band. He knew what they wanted to get at. So he did a superb job. And, you know, what was great was that we didn't kind of think that's, it was different. It was just the band. And then when it went out into press, of course, it got fantastic reviews, and then we toured it, and the whole thing was amazing. And it was, funny enough, only till later, there was a journalist, probably, you know, even 11 months later or something after we toured it, who'd said to me, you know, how did it feel stepping into someone else's shoes? And it was the first time I'd actually thought, oh, yeah, I forgot I did.
Yeah, wow.
because it was just it just seemed such a natural thing, yeah, to do, such a natural thing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't try and be, you know, somebody. I didn't try and be him, because why? Why would you want to do that? You know, he was a huge character. Is a huge character, and what he did as part of that whole thing was, you know, legendary and will be there forever. So I thought, well, there's no point being anybody but yourself. It's kind of what we're like now, you know. We're still the same people, you know, amenable, and we turn it up on stage, and that's all you can be, just honest and genuine, really.
Right on. And, you know, you had bands like Venom and Motorhead in the early 80s doing their thing, and they were getting more recognition from what you were getting with Adam Kraft, but in a way you were doing that extreme rock and that extreme metal at a time when these other guys were doing it too. So it seems like you would be the natural guy to you know.
Well, that was kind of it,
Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, initially on the first stuff, you know, I was playing bass and singing, you know, and I guess, yeah, you know, back then there wasn't anything kind of extreme, you know. And then, you know, Venom launched with the releases, and then everybody was like, what the hell's going on there? But I guess even before the releases, it was kind of what we'd been all kind of been doing. Not so much the new wave of British heavy metal, although it was at that time, but just pushing the barriers a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my band, I remember we went in and did the first demo, and we took the tape home, and that was it. We were the only people who listened to it, because we didn't think you know, like, what do you do next? I've got no idea. How do people get record deals? I don't know. Who do you send it to? No idea. So, you know, we just kept playing shows and writing songs and recording for ourselves. So it was only then when, in fact, it was probably Raven, when I saw Raven and Fist releasing singles, and I thought, oh, wow. And I used to get the bus from where John Gallagher lived. Okay. So I knew John and Mark and had seen them play. And then, you know, hearing their first single, it was like, oh, my God, you actually made a record. And then you start to click and go, how does that work then? And, of course, then Venom came, and it was like, oh, my God. And the whole thing started to make sense, you know. So, yeah, but that transition was natural. Like you said, you know, I was already in that ballpark anyway. So, for me, it just felt completely natural. And, you know, there's a complementary style to Jeff, you know. For some reason, his style is everything I like. And when we play together, it's, you know, like second skin kind of stuff. You know, we read each other so well, and it sits so well. Putting the three of us on stage together, it just all kind of works naturally, you know? So natural.
And Adam Kraft, you guys have done stuff through the years. You've gotten back together and done stuff here and there. Is it still active at this point? Like, what's the status of that band?
Well, it is. It's kind of, you know, the original band, the guys went their way. Drummer became a photographer and a teacher, and the guitarist runs a theater in Newcastle now. And then off the back of Future Warriors, you know, the three of us on there, you know, the drummer was the brother of Eric Cook, the Venom manager, and he runs a studio now and has his business and kind of does that, doesn't drum so much. And the guitarist, I guess, travels the world with some bells on his slippers and sits on a mountain in Peru with an acoustic guitar. So, we, you know, when there was always offers every year to do something with Adam Kraft, but it was just me. And, you know, I just thought, oh, this, you know, I can't put a band together just to do these things. So I let it all go. But, you know, eventually I bent and said, yeah, okay. So I borrowed some guys, some friends for some of the bands who learned the material, and we went out and did some shows. But I'd recorded several singles and then some album material. So I have a whole bunch of stuff, some of it more thrashy and some of it more original Adam Kraft, like, I guess, kind of Motorhead-y, early Venom stuff. Sounding more like that, and it just keeps sitting in my house, because every time, you know, I find a space and think, oh, maybe I should finish that, we're doing something. Either me and Jeff are always doing something together. So and now this has all taken up the time. We're coming into year three with Venom Inc. We've still got the Empire album we would like to finish off. So, you know, trying to squeeze something in from Adam Kraft is always very hard. But it's an ongoing thing, and I think it's part of my identity and who I am. You know, it was never big-selling material. It was always completely underground, and I appreciate that. But it never stopped me from wanting to play shows and wanting to deliver on that. So I have one festival in October doing as a special guest with Adam Kraft. And then we'll see what happens from there.
Very good. And I know we probably got to wrap it up, but I wanted to just real quick, you mentioned the Empire project or band of evil. Now, did that kind of evolve into Venom Inc., or can you?
No. I mean, you know, we at the point where we got to where Abaddon came in, and like I say, that was a complete kind of one-off is how we looked at it. Me and Jeff were at a point where we had the new album written. We just had to put the vocals on, the bass on, and then it was ready to go. And we got this shot to play this festival and to 2,000 hardcore fans. And would you invite Abaddon up and just play, you know, four or five songs just for them, just for fun? And that was it. We said, yeah, sure. And it hasn't stopped rolling. You know, someone put a brick on the gas pedal and it hasn't come off yet. So we haven't, the album we have for Empire is still sitting there, but we're determined we want to finish it, because at the point where we began doing the Venom Inc. thing, we both sat there and listened to the stuff we had, the backing tracks we had, and just went, this is the best thing we've ever done. Wow. And, you know, we don't want to waste it. So as soon as we get a decent enough cap, we can finish it. We want to finish it and get that straight out.
And,
so,
and who else is in that band besides but you and Jeff Dunn?
Well, we had a drummer who committed for the album, is Francesco Fulò La Rosa, and he an Italian drummer who plays in a band called Extrema and Master Castle, and he was with us for live shows. Before that, we had Mark Jackson, who's now with Acid Rain, and both of them are kind of in the band as our drummer, you know. Okay. Mark did it. We released Crucified, which was some older Venom songs, and which had been held up because those albums have been unreleased for so many years, right. And they won't reissue them. So we re-recorded some with Mark Jackson and added a couple of new songs. But then by the time we got to Unleashed, Mark was busy, and so Francesco came in and he was filling in duties. So when we got to Unleashed, he took the tapes and he committed all the drums to that. So it's kind of nice because I guess Empire's really myself and Mantis, and then we get to go out and play live. We get to use drummers who are available, who, you know, there's a whole corral of them who are all just superb and great guys. So it means that for them, they can keep working on all of their things. And for us, it makes it easier logistically, you know, when they're available and we're available, we can go and do something. So it's great. It's great.
Awesome. Awesome. Last question. I mean, you're just so busy with music. I'm guessing I probably know the answer to this question, but you've also done acting. You've done some pretty high profile stuff. You're an actor.
Yeah, fortunately.
Is there any acting going on for you now, or is that kind of just all on hold at this point?
Well, it's kind of on hold. You know, I think people had asked that before and said, you know, kind of like is in a way that like you tried to do it and then it didn't work, so you know you don't do it anymore. But it wasn't that way. It's like, you know, I'm a workaholic, so I can't sit down for more than 10 minutes without thinking I should be doing something. And the acting thing, I worked as an engineer and a master carpenter for the Royal Shakespeare Company, and by accident I ended up covering an actor because I know Shakespeare so well, and they asked
me. Wow, Shakespeare.
And then, I know, and you know, again, it was like a happy accident. They went, would you go on and cover this role because one of our actors is sick, they didn't have any cover, and you know the play, and I just said, okay. And I thought, this is bizarre, they're asking me. But I went on and did it, enjoyed it, and then got invited to do more work with them. And everything went from there, Judge Dredd, and then, you know, Master and Commander, stuff for HBO, stuff for the BBC, on stage, all of a sudden I was performing as well. And, you know, I enjoyed it very much. But, you know, then the music is kind of like my first love, and it gives you a different kind of gratification, you know. Doing movies or doing TV, you know, it's okay, but it can feel like a conveyor belt, you know, that you just come in, you're painted up, you put your clothes on, you go and say your line, and off you go again. And, you know, your participation is not as rich as when you're playing music, you know, because you can't get to the fans. The beauty of the music is, and particularly, you know, I'm a club guy, you know, I've always been a club guy. I like the hotter it is, the fuller it is, the dirtier it is, the better it feels for me. The closer the audience are, the more I can feel their energy and give my energy back. And you don't get that behind a lens. You know, live theatre is, you do get those nerves and you do get some of that atmosphere. But with film and TV, you don't so much get it. So I guess it was a kind of an easy choice. I mean, I've done some voiceovers. There's some other projects that keep coming up every now and then. There's a documentary I'm doing in Italy based on music and art, but culturally. So now it's all about, instead of being Michelangelo and Da Vinci and opera, it's all, you know, rock music, metal and tattooists. But it's the new generation, the new artists of Italy, and just to show the transition. So there's things I'm always doing. You know, if something cool came along, then absolutely, I'd obviously be a fool to say no. But while we're focused on the Venom Inc. thing, I really want to make this, you know, I guess I want... I want to give back to fans, but I want them to realize the richness of what Venom was and who Venom are. And also, you know, for these guys at our age in life, is I think it's about time that they got some kind of recognition for, you know, what they've been doing all their lives for this industry and for fans, you know. Absolutely. I think that's really kind of important to me.
Wow, Tony, it's been great talking with you. You have a great day, and I will be at the New York show. I hope to shake your hand again.
Absolutely. I'll put you on the guest list, and you'll be my guest, and I can't wait. So here we are. You want it clean, but you're going to spend back the king. And Total Metal, we're the best, because we're the fucking dirtiest. And we'll chew you up. You about, then I'll turn the metal spit you out. Go!
That was Total Metal by Adam Kraft featuring Tony Demolition Man Dolan, some old school metal from Tony.
Yeah, now that was a band he played with before Venom. And I mean, listen to that sound. I mean, they were doing basically extreme metal back at the same time bands like Venom and Exciter and Motorhead were doing it. Adam Kraft was a band that was formed in 1979 and disbanded in about 1988. Which is about the time he joined Venom. And again, they were right there on that kind of first wave of extreme metal bands. Also partly considered one of the new wave of British heavy metal bands too, you know, which a lot of those bands were. So not necessarily Exciter because they were from Canada, but you know what I'm saying.
Right, right. Speaking of British heavy metal bands, we just saw Iron Maiden
in
Newark. And that was an amazing show. Really reminded me of the old days. I was just so psyched to see those guys in person. And we've seen and we've met and interviewed just about everybody. And I literally still get like a charge when I see these Maiden guys in person.
Yeah, and me too. And I've seen them dozens of times, and it was so much fun. And the turnout was just amazing. I was told by somebody who worked at the Prudential Center in Newark, it was they sold 95% of the tickets in advance. Wow. And I mean, when I looked around the arena, I didn't see one open seat. So I'm guessing maybe it was sold out or just about. And which is just amazing. The first time I saw Maiden was like 32 years ago or something.
That's
Milwaukee,
great.
Wisconsin. So it's been a long run for me with that band, and I've seen them consistently through the years. And it's really was an emotional experience. And, you know, I was there with Emily and being there with friends like you, John, who we just have such a long history. And I walked out of there just like, kind of like, I don't know, like feeling emotional, you know, I really did.
Yeah, no, but I understand 100% what you're saying. Excluding Kiss or Ace, I don't even have to, look this up. Iron Maiden is the band that I've seen more times in concert than any other band.
Ghost, one of our favorite newer bands, opening up. I know John and I and Emily are all massive fans. And Mike Lincoln,
the
drummer in your band, was also at the concert. And real quick, just he texted me, you guys have a gig coming up, right? Like It is the band John is playing in, and you guys have a gig coming up. Where is it?
Yeah, we have a gig at a place called Tobacco Road, and it's on 41st Street in Manhattan. And believe it or not, it's underneath Port Authority, the bus terminal, the big gigantic bus terminal in Manhattan. Tons of people who live in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania come to New York every day by way of buses who drive right into Port Authority. And there's a road, 41st Street, that goes actually through Port Authority and actually used to be called Port 41, but now it's called Tobacco Road. They keep switching the name.
It used to be like decades ago it was called Tobacco Road.
Yeah, it was.
Because I played a gig at Tobacco Road at that place. I don't know if it was you. I don't think it was with you, I definitely played a gig there either with like Sea Dogs band or Captain T band or something. Yeah, I definitely played there at one point.
Tobacco Road, and then it was called Port 41, and then they keep, name. It went by Best Bar for a little while too, but now it's back to Tobacco Road. They got a cool stage. Bands, I know Fastest Pussycat has played there and some other bands, but this gig, headlining is Warrior Soul.
Cool.
And they are, of course, a great band. We had our friend Corey Clark on the TV show Talking Metal, and we did Paranoid and I Want to Rock, and he's just such a cool guy.
Yeah, which those are up on YouTube, guys. If maybe I'll try to link those through today's show
that'd
notes.
Be great.
There's a great version of Paranoid with Corey Clark from Warrior Soul, and Eddie Ojeda from Twisted Sister on guitar. Richard Christie on drums from Death and Iced Earth and Howard Stern fame, and John's on guitar, and I think I'm on bass.
Yep.
So it's a fun watch. We'll hopefully have those linked through today's show notes. And I don't know what else is going on with you.
Oh, I want to also give a shout out to my friend Andrew Metalfire Janda, who is the guy who hooked Like It up with this gig. And Andrew is not only the leader of the band Metal Fire, and it's spelled Metal, F-I-E-R. They just headlined the Gramercy Theater a couple weeks ago, and he is also the guitarist of Warrior Soul, and he's a Talking Metal fan.
Oh, cool.
I remember one day I was coincidentally in Port Authority, and he came up to me and he goes, "Hey, I'm Metal Fire. I'm a Talking Metal listener." And he's such a great guy, and he's totally engulfed in the business. I hung out with him at the Guns N' Roses concert, the we were both that together out at the MetLife Stadium, right. And he's just such a great guy, a great guitar player, a great band leader, and you should definitely check out Metal Fire, M-E-T-E-L. No. M-E-T-A-L. I can't even spell metal anymore. M-E-T-A-L-F-I-E-R, and definitely check those guys out as well. Maybe
cool.
We can,
and where can we check out Like It online? Where can we check out Like It?
So Like It, yeah, you can check it too at like-it-online.com. And there's some old stuff on there. We're going to start posting some newer videos and some new audio stuff. There's some old demos on there that I actually didn't play on. They're really old, but Like It has went into the studio recently and laid down some new demos down at, or I don't know if you would call them demos or actually just tracks, down at IIR where we recorded with Captain T and Astronomy.
Cool. And John, any updates on Ace? Of course, John works with the one and only Ace Frehley, and we're always just itching for any updates you can give us on what he's up to.
Yeah. Ace is in the studio, in his brand new studio out in California, and he is working on new material. So there you have it. Wow. Ace working on new material. Ace has three shows in Florida coming up in July. There is a show in Vegas in August. And then in October, Ace will, of course, be going down under to Australia and touring with Alice Cooper, who is doing a 40th anniversary tour, I believe it's called. That's not the actual name of the tour, but it's a 40th anniversary tour, and it's just going to be really a great event, a must-see for anyone from both Australia and New Zealand. So that's going to be some cool stuff happening. And so Ace, yeah, he's got a full plate ahead of him, and it's really, really cool. So that's what's happening on the Ace Frehley front. So, Mark, enough of my yapping. Who's the guy who said enough of my yapping?
I don't know.
It's something like actor was like, enough of my yapping. You know that was?
It sounds familiar. I couldn't tell you who it was, though.
So somebody write in and tell us who that was, because it's going to kill me until I figure that out. So, Mark, enough of my yapping. What's happening with you?
Well, you know, I don't know, man. I'm just like so sick of like working and my job, and I just like I'm seriously thinking of just like taking like August off and maybe just like doing talking metal and playing guitar again. And it's just like I just, you know, like I produce promos and write promos, and on the one hand I should be very fortunate and thankful because you know I make a decent living. I mean, I'm not like living very large, but I get by, you know, and I'm just like so sick of it. I can't fucking take it anymore, man. It's just like, so I want to like in August, I'm like seriously thinking of taking the month off, which is financially not a good idea, but just like doing the website every day, playing guitar again. And, you know, I ended up producing promos, commercials for like cable TV shows and movies, like by accident, really. And it's just like, I've had a few little breaks where I used to do documentaries at VH1, like Bowie documentaries, real cool stuff, Curtis Mayfield and, you know, Led Zeppelin and all sorts of great stuff, VH1 legends, Marvin Gaye, Elton John. I mean, we did great work, and it was stuff I was very proud of and really loved great the stuff that I good did stuff. At VH1. And somehow I like fell into doing promos because I knew somebody who was like, oh, why don't you come do some promos? And I've had some fun moments doing promos through the years, but now I'm many decades in to this promo thing, and I had a few nice breaks. Well, thanks. A few nice breaks, like where we did the Talking Metal on Fuse show. I got to stop doing promos and do long form again for whatever that was, 3 months, and then, you know, that metal show, the final season of that, I got to work on that for 4 months, which was great. You know, not doing promos, working on a long form show that was a topic that I had a deep passion about. Yeah, and it's just like, I just a few days ago, like, you know, after some relatively bad days at work where my boss is currently, you know, because I bounce around, I'm freelance, so I get on projects for like 5 months or 1 month or 6 months or a year sometimes. But I just like, I was just like so sick of like the nonsense that's going on. And I just woke up the other day and I was like, how did I fucking end up here? You know, and it's like, I just want to spend time with my kids and do the website and play guitar and you know,
we got to do a
dinner
gig
with my wife. Yeah, I want to do a gig. I need something. You know, Dan Lorenzo was like, I want you to be in my Kiss cover band. And I was like all excited about that. But I barely have time to ever pick up the guitar is the problem, you know, because of everything else going on. Much of what I love, like talking metal, my family, and that's basically it.
Maybe take August off and just have a great month doing all that stuff, and then you could always resume doing promos again, you know, after a month.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, because I'm freelance, like when I don't have, people are like, oh, well, it must be nice when you have time off. And I'm fortunate because I don't get a lot of time off,
right?
But I don't get paid when I have time off. And then I'm stressed. Like, you know, like about a year ago, I had like 3 weeks off that I didn't want off. And I should have just kicked back and relaxed. But instead, every day I was like just stressing out because I was like, oh, my God, I have no foreseeable income coming in. You know, and then, of course, work all fell into place and I was turning down work. But it's just like, I don't know, man. I just like it's like sometimes in life you fall into these things and it's very hard to break out of them, you know, I was watching this Motorhead thing. It was like the making of the Ace of Spades record. And it's a great documentary if you haven't seen it. It's like, I forget what they call them. They're like a classic albums or something.
Yeah, I was watching the Rush 2112, one of those today.
Oh, I got to see that. But the Motorhead one was great. And Lemmy in there says, life is a series of mistakes and accidents, you know, you know, what determines your path. You know, all Lemmy wanted to do was be the bassist in Hawkwind, you know, and he got fired, you know, so he had to do something else. And that's how Motorhead came about, you know, so it's like,
but look, they became this legendary thing in all of our eyes. And so it's thank God he got fired from that band, or else who knows, we might not have had Motorhead, you know?
Right. No, that's true. It's true. I've been on a super crazy Motorhead kick lately, specifically that early stuff, you know, and just the weirdness that went on. You know, it's like, this is a band that had like two first records and it really, you know, they had On Parole, which wasn't Fast Eddie or Filthy on that one. It was just Lemmy and some other guys, and that got shelved. But then when they released the self-titled, technically what was their first record, which was songs that Filthy and Fast Eddie played on with Lemmy, but they didn't really write. It was basically the songs off of On Parole and some other stuff.
Wow.
And that got released. But then the company that owned the rights to On Parole then released that. So they had like two debut records.
That's wild. Yeah.
And so it really wasn't until they finally put out, you know, the Overkill record in like 1979. It was really, in my opinion, that was true Motorhead, because that's, you know, they all wrote on that record. It has that awesome Motorhead sound and a lot of great stuff that band has given us through the years. And just,
we are lucky.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are totally lucky. But yeah, you know, Mark, I just want to say that I think that you've had and you currently are going to continue to have a great career in the TV production world. And even though you're bummed and kind of, you know, I'm not sure what the right word is, I still think you should be proud of all the, you know, even the promo stuff, because I think so many people would you know, die to be in that position to where you can have a career in producing promos, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right. Although I heard David Spade on Howard Stern.
Oh, yeah.
I guess he was a promo producer for
really?
And he said it was just it's the absolute worst job anybody could ever have. Which it's not.
I don't think
it's
so.
Not. Yeah, it's definitely not. I mean, I watch TV for a living and then, you know, put
I had
together
fun
stuff
when,
and then get told to change it and, you know, do difference. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm just burn out, man.
Yeah, I got to get a 30-second story here. Yeah, one of the things that I still love is when you used to be at Bionic, and I used to come over during my lunch breaks, and we used to order from Cozy, and, you know, you'd be producing and I'd be eating, and, you know, I thought that was such a cool gig. I was like, man, that's such a great job Mark's got. He's in these great studios.
No, it was. However, the industry's changed a lot, you know.
Oh, okay.
Like back in those days, which, you know, we're talking only like 10 years ago or less, you know, I had a job, a corporate job. I was a senior writer producer at Sci-Fi, producing and writing their promos. You know, so I'd go to these facilities who would want our business, and they would buy me lunch every day. And we used to do a live radio stream, which one of those facilities paid for, which was like practically payola. I'll admit it now, because it was like that was to keep me bringing the business there, and it worked, you know. You know, but granted, they gave me good product for my real job. So, you know, but definitely I was a little more devoted to them because they let us do Talking Metal live there. You know, but that's the business. Like, all that stuff has disappeared because everyone, now you don't need a big edit suite to edit videos anymore. You don't need $100,000 tape decks and stuff. Everything's digital. Everybody has, you know, Final Cut Pro and Adobe Premiere Pro and Avid right on their laptops, you know. So it's a different
world. Yeah, you're right. It's a different vibe now, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a different world. I mean, they used to pay mixers to mix 30-second promos, you know, $2,000 a day. It's like now they pay people $400 to mix a promo that goes on air on a station like Sci-Fi or USA, because you can do it right on your MacBook Air, you know, right? Yeah. Using GarageBand.
These facilities are all
all out of business.
Facilities are all gone. Business. Wow.
They're all, not all, but most of them. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a changing world, but it brings me back to, like, why couldn't, you know, we had a big network that did the Talking Metal on Fuse TV show. We spent, you know, tons of money on each episode. I say the network did. Same thing with That Metal Show, which I had the fortunate honor of working on, but it was a corporate machine. You know, it was tons of people, tons of money spent on every episode. But in today's world, like, with all the editing that you can do right on your computer, like, why couldn't we, like, just do our own version of Talking Metal TV again, right on YouTube, you know, do 15-second episodes. I mean, honestly, that's where I'm at. It's like, why aren't I doing something like that instead of going and, you know, busting my ass for, you know, a bunch of frustration every day. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I think do an experiment, enjoy August. And then, you know, like you said, until something takes off, and I would love to be doing a TV style show on YouTube on a regular basis again. That would be amazing.
But it is money, you know, even though things are less, like, okay, so it's not going to cost $70,000 to do an episode like it did when we were on Fuse, but you know, it could to do a nicely produced where we do some interviews, and like even that, you know, thing I shot Emily interviewing Vixen. Right. I mean, that wasn't done for free. You know, I spent some of my own money. I hired an editor to do it. I bought a camera, you know, that cost a little money, and that's pretty low budget.
We had to travel down to the M3 upstate.
So the stuff costs money. But if there was some way that, hey, we can get it back. I mean, I just watched a video on YouTube of some guy playing the Trooper by Maiden on his banjo, and it had like 600,000 views in like less than a week. And I was like, that guy's making some money. I mean, he probably had to clear the rights to the song. You probably had to do a few things, but that guy's making some money. I mean,
those YouTube, like the hits and stuff, right? Is that how that works?
Yeah. If you have the ads up, I mean, you can make money. I mean, he's not making a ton of money. If he had 6 million views, that might be better, but
that's a lot of views.
Yeah.
In a week.
That's a lot of views. That's a lot of week. That's a lot of views. You know, so it's
okay,
like,
I'm getting a banjo, guys. And I'm going
to play. Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Why didn't I go hire a banjo guy to learn the trooper, pay him $500 and shoot him doing it.
Yeah, and then put that up on YouTube. Metal.
Yeah, and put it on our YouTube page and make some money, you know.
600,000 hits on one thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and we have a lot of hits on some of those jams. I mean, I think one of those jams has like 100,000 hits or something like that. And that's a lot. Yeah.
Some of the jams, like, we aren't monetized, though. Like, when you put a clip on YouTube. And the reason is because I've tried to monetize them. And some of them, we've detected that somebody else owns the rights to this song. Even covers that we did, YouTube somehow detects that it's a cover and that we didn't clear it, which we would need to hire a lawyer and go through the publishing and legally clear it, which, you know, isn't impossible, but it's still going to cost.
With these older ones, it's probably not even worth it anymore because.
Yeah. No, it's going to cost us $1,000 to hire a lawyer to clear it. And then then to get, you know, internet rights to the, you know, publishing, we obviously don't need sound recording because we're covering it, but that's going to still cost, you know, that could cost $5,000, that could cost $50,000. It's probably closer to $5,000, but still, it's like, and then are you going to make $6,000 back with a clip that has 600,000 views? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah. It's nuts. I know there are a lot of people that do some crazy thing and they end up getting super rich on it. And I just wish that we could figure that out because
it
kills me when something ridiculous happens, like the Cash Me Outside or something. And then that person gets, you know, like $1 million for doing something like wacky when, you know, here it is. We're trying to do something technically artistic and entertaining and, you know, with some type of integrity. And I'm not mad at the Cash Me Outside girl, for example, but you know, it's like, why can't you know, we're trying really hard and it'd be nice if we were rewarded for our effort.
I'm totally there. And use those Amazon links on the site. Those help support the show, and you can leave a PayPal donation if you wish to. Visit the site, leave comments, let us know what you thought of this episode in the comments section on talkingmetal.com. John, you're on Twitter. You're on Instagram. We'll get those linked through today's show notes.
Yeah, I'm on all these new things now. Instagram, Twitter. Yeah. And you know what I got to find? Yeah, I know. It's not new.
New to you. I mean,
new to me. New to me. The whole world's been on Instagram and Twitter for like ever. And now I am on Instagram and Twitter as well as Facebook and MySpace, although I haven't. I don't. My MySpace.
MySpace.
I don't even know if that exists anymore, but it may not. I haven't thought of MySpace update.
No, I think that went out of business like a decade ago, at least.
You know what I heard? Did that Forbidden pass away? The girl from MySpace, her name was Forbidden. I hope that she didn't, but I think she may have.
Like, no clue.
It was like one of the earlier MySpace people. If she didn't, I'm so
was
sorry.
Was that a Bumblefoot fan?
I don't know. Like, Forbidden, I thought, was one of the first ever MySpace people. Hold on for 30 seconds, because I got to look this up real quick.
Oh, right.
MySpace. Forbidden. Yeah. This girl, her name is Christina Dolce, and she was also known as Forbidden on MySpace, has passed away at the age of 35 from liver failure. And I remember, there's this song, and there's a song that she used to play. It was this a cappella song with the, forget the name of the girl who actually did the song, but she's really famous. My brain can't remember things anymore. So I heard this song first on her page, and she was like one of these MySpace people, like Tila Tequila, that like everybody did be friends with. And she sadly passed away. But
Well,
crazy thing back in February. So little news in case you did not hear that, and in case you still have MySpace. But
well, John, I got to get out of here. I got to go get another beer and go to bed. And I know you have to go check your MySpace page.
I got to go check my MySpace page. I'm going to update it right now. And I do have to find, though, there's a picture of me from maybe like 1986 or 1987, and I'm in a picture, like a kind of a group, not a posed group shot, but kind of like a backstage group shot with Bruce Dickinson. Did I ever show you that?
Oh no, I haven't seen that. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to search for that photo. I don't know where it is, but I'm going to try to find it. Cool. If I do, well, maybe I'll put it on my
Put it on Facebook. Yeah, definitely. Cool. Throwback Thursday.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thank you, guys. Right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Iron Maiden, Wasted Years on Talking Metal.
Cool. All right. Good, John. Thanks, I'll clean it up a little bit, but most of it's pretty good. Yeah.